Welcome everyone to the American Carpa podcast, where we discuss all things carp related in the USA. Featuring anglers' interviews, stories, and monthly competitions with traditional US and Euro anglers, fly anglers, and anyone who has a passion for this incredible fish, the carp, Cyprinus carpio. Much maligned and misunderstood, and undoubtedly one of the finest sport fish to be targeted here in the USA. This is where we, the guilty ones, can meet. My name is Sean Manning of the American Carp Society, and I'm grateful to be your host. Welcome, everybody. Today we have a very special guest who is well known throughout the U.S. carp angling community, my dear friend and co-founder in the American Carp Society, Mr. Wayne Boone. So welcome, mate.
Thank you, Sean. It'll be a pleasure.
It's long great time. To have you here.
Yeah, I was going to say, long time no talk.
I know. Well, you know, for the listeners, Wayne and I, obviously, we speak quite a bit, but we don't always get the time with everything that we're doing to discuss or to look back over a lot of the history and everything that we've been through, because it's quite significant, mate, isn't it, since we first came over here?
Yeah. Talking, what, 1988?
I think it was 88 or 89.
We were 88. Started college. Yeah. Yeah, came over for college. Whoa.
Mere slip of lads, both of us. Before we take a walk down a little bit about that, you know, part when things started together for us, Wayne, why don't you, let's talk a little bit about how you first, you know, because you're from Macclesfield originally in the UK. How did you first get into fishing?
Macclesfield, Cheshire. There's loads of water around the place. I always had walks around the place, but none of my family fished.
Right.
So it was, you know, there's always a fascination with water. I used to collect water snails and frogs. Always used to be down by the waterside. And, you know, it just something mystical about these guys that would pull these, unbeknownst to me at the time, perch and roach, these silverfish out. And then I guess it was about 7, maybe 8, and my uncle, an aunt, took us on vacation to holiday to the west coast of Scotland. And he took me fishing. He was a part. Okay. You know, he didn't fish a lot, but he had a fishing rod. So, I want some of that.
Was it sea fishing in Scotland, or was it freshwater?
It was a freshwater loch. Depending where you fished on the loch, whether it was seawater or freshwater. Loch Linney, actually.
Yeah.
So, that was a formative, you know. We actually caught some fish. So, I think it's volume one of the American Carpa.
I think you're probably that. Yeah. I remember that picture actually.
Yeah, my uncle.
I remember that picture as well. So when you started to after your initial introduction there, because the not having fished in your part of England myself, the visuals I get are of canals everywhere. Did you start actually fishing when you got back? Did you start fishing in canals, or was it lakes or
canals and small ponds? There was a pond, some people might be nodding, called Swan's Pool, and we had two reservoirs in and around the area of Macclesfield I used to live. And eventually I grew, you know, I taught my dad, or my uncle taught my dad, into letting me go with a fishing rod one time.
Gotcha. And that's how it all started.
But lots of canals, which are basically still waters, with locks on them for people that are listening. If you can picture the narrow boats going up and down, and the towpaths with the horses used to pull the narrow boats along with tons of coal and other commodities in it.
And was probably perch and roach and silverfish and that type of thing. Were there any carp in there at all?
Not,
in the canals?
Not that I knew of. Not at the time. There is now.
Yeah. They've probably been introduced now.
I would think so. There's been floods, and they've moved from the local ponds, or somebody's koi pond has overflowed out up on the hill there.
Somebody tripped and fell with some in a bucket, something like that.
Possibly. It does happen. It has been known.
Yeah. And do you go back, when you go back home to, you know, when you go back to England, because this obviously is home for us in the USA, but when you go back, do you get a chance to, because I always try to, you know, to hit the local river and stuff like that. Do you do the same?
I do with my brother. We go back in town. We have a one rod, plastic Tesco bag, shopping bag full of a pack of hooks, one you know, a couple of floats, some split shot, and usually about half a pint of maggots, and we just go and sit on the canal and reminisce,
right,
and go and hammer the bream and the and the roach.
We should pack digestives and a pot of tea.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, flask of tea. But you know, the roach for people who listen, more like a shiner out here in the States.
And they're beautiful fish, aren't they?
Oh, they are. Yeah. It was one of those. You know, you always wanted to. The carp was king.
It was as mysterious, wasn't it?
Was.
When we were there.
Yeah, we used to see them in the summer, this time of year, cruising the top, and it's like, used to make take your breath away.
You never bloody catch them, though, could you, over there when we were kids?
No. Well, it was a specialist angler type thing, and you know, and the local lads didn't take kindly to you asking too many questions, you know, because that was their water.
Right.
Yeah, so you had to work your way up through the ranks, as it were.
We had a legend in our village. His name was Reg Warren. He was probably in his 70s, and he used to ride around with a trilby hat on, and it had a little feather in it, on his bicycle, and he'd go fishing. And that man, he could pull a fish out of a puddle. He had a black tipped float. That was a thing as kids, because you know, we all had orange and red tipped floats. He fished with a black float, and it was the coolest, sultriest thing.
Was he helpful, or was he a standoffish guy?
He was actually really helpful. Mm-hmm. He one day he pulled out this massive great rod for, you know, as a kid, it was probably about 2 pound, mm-hmm. which was a big rod for a river.
Yeah.
And he always used to fish with bread. He fished with this black top float, because out in the Fenlands, you have a cloudy day, the water is kind of, you know, it looks white. And that was the coolest thing. So you had guys in your area, the older guys probably, you know, didn't want to ask too many questions.
There was one guy, he had this Pooch Maxi. It was like a two-stroke chicken chaser bike.
Oh, I know Pooch Maxi. Yeah. Yeah.
Ring, ding, 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 ding. You're one of those.
Yeah.
And you used to go up into this Millbrook and Lowerbrook. It was up in the next village up above where we lived. And he had this Shakespeare rod, this 12-foot rod, which was massive to me. I mean, the blank must have been an inch and a quarter across at the butt section. You know, it's massive.
Right.
And they used to use a monkey climber.
Oh, wow.
He talked us through it, and oh, I can't wait to do this, you know. He was very helpful. Obviously, he's not with us anymore, but God bless him. He made a big impact. Another guy, Jack Glenn, a friend of my dad's, he was a good fisherman, and he helped me with the floats.
It's amazing when you're young, that impact, or those older anglers with a lot more experience, they can really help shape your direction.
Make or break, you know? Really.
Especially when you're really young. What about, did you actually get into carp fishing in the UK before we came out to the States? Because I'd never actually fished for carp before I came out here.
I was 11.
So you did.
11 years old.
Wow.
When the breather, I can't even remember his real name. That's terrible. The guy with the Pooch Maxi, he finally let me pull one in on his rod. So I was 11 years old. That was I didn't sleep that night. It was a mirror.
I bet.
Yeah, maybe.
What size was it?
7-8 pounds.
Wow, which would be massive.
It was. If you had a 10-pound carp, you were king of the pond. That 12 was. Oh my goodness me! You know, this guy knows something we don't.
And 20-pounders were what myths and legends were made of.
Maybe you read about it in the Angling Times. It might have been Chris Ball had wrote about it. One of the other guys, you know, at the time. Frank Warwick, he was a big in my neck of the woods. But he used to fish Reedsmere and, oh gosh, another lake. Somebody will write in and tell me, I'm sure. But I went to those lakes, but I never had the balls to go up and say hello, because this dude is like, oh my God. You know,
right.
I wish I had. I've talked to him since.
It was great when he came out for one of our tournaments, and we got to hang out with him.
We had a chat about that. So I think went out in Vienna one time with him too, in Austria.
Oh dear.
That was a crazy night. Anyway, that's another story. We don't need to get into that one.
That is great. And then obviously for us both, when we came over, our fishing ended up being a respite from the crazy worlds that we were, music worlds, obviously, that we were both living in. And it was always that thing, wasn't it, that would center us. We'd, every couple of months, we'd be like, are you ready? You want to get away, escape?
I'd get a call from you, or it was like time, and I said, Sean, we need to go fishing. And, we had some good times, particularly on that place in Malibu, man.
That's correct, yeah. And also now, you know, seeing something, they don't run a lot of those shows anymore, but you see something like if Planet of the Apes movie or
MASH. Even
I think MASH, the House on the Prairie, they were all shot there, weren't they?
So MASH particularly, I mean, there's still a little museum there to it.
Yeah, I remember those trips, Wayne. And when I look back at how we approached them then with, because what was it? We were fishing. We were up there just fishing for bass and stuff. And then all of a sudden, we saw a bunch of them sunning themselves, didn't we?
My recollection is I did not realize that there were carp in the US.
No, me neither.
I was here just for, you know, like yourself, music college and to go be a rock and roll star.
Right.
Didn't quite work out my side, but maybe we can get into that later. But you did okay.
You didn't miss anything at all, believe me.
But we were chucking lures or had a worm on a float. There's a few stories there by the reeds. And my recollection is the reeds moving.
You caught the first one. You caught the first one. We were float fishing in that little pond at the end, and you caught the first one on a float with a worm, didn't you?
That's the way it was written. But what actually happened is we couldn't catch one for love nor money once we'd seen one.
Right. That's true. That's right.
Yeah. My aunt, my uncle that first took me fishing, they got me a book by Johnny Wilson.
Right.
And it was the really early book, so the hare had just come in. And his thing with the hare was a piece of cotton tied to the bend of the hook.
That's right. Yeah.
And it says, try sweet corn. So that's what we did. And I don't think that float was in the water 10 minutes before it flew off.
That's right. That lake was split up, wasn't it, with the floods into little ponds. Do you remember?
Well, it's a big, in a big V-neck valley, right? So really it should be a big river channel, but it gets muddied up because it doesn't flood every year. So it created little ponds.
And there was a really small one. You're right. There was there was the end one where we were fishing that day, and I was catching a bunch of bass on a lure, I remember. And I think you caught one there. You caught one there, I remember, on a float with a worm, half worm, but with a worm, by the reeds. And then we went to look, and then there was a really, really small pond. It was really small. And we were both in there catching them on sweet corn.
Yeah,
that was it.
And then
that was incredible.
We were away. I mean, I remember Rachel's face when I got home. I was all excited. What's up? We found carp. And she goes,
Because we just thought they were, it was just catfish, wasn't it?
Well, you had a nice one, didn't you?
I did. When we went that night fishing that one time with a starlet float adapter hung over the line.
Yeah.
That's right. You thought it was a carp. And originally, when it first went off, you thought it was a carp, but it was a nice fish.
What did we nickname
And we thing? Used to sleep. We used to sleep on the bank, on a trash bag.
Yeah, black trash bag liner.
Black bloody trash bag. And eventually, I found out I was sleeping actually not on a trash bag. It was a body bag. It was a medical body bag that I picked up at an army surplus store.
Right.
And it was black, but it had this zipper at the top. And I'm like, what the hell? And I started to do some research. Mr. Manning, it was Mr. a bloody Manning body bag.
That's Mr. Manning get his flamboyant best right there.
But we would sit, wouldn't we, all night, would sleep actually on the bank, on the dirt, and we would hear the, because the army used to do maneuvers up there, didn't they?
They do. Somebody with jack boots, big, little platoons of them.
They would come, wouldn't they? We'd be hunkered down there and stuff.
I'm sure they saw us.
Oh, I know they did. Well, there was a couple of times we got questioned, didn't we?
Particularly when you did your gardening, you tried to put that ledge on the side so you wouldn't fall in again.
That's right.
And somebody'd seen us and thought we were growing some weed or something. I don't know.
I probably did.
But we got rumbled.
I'm like, no, I'm hacking a spot, mate. We're carp fishing. These are the look that we got.
Yeah. IDs, please.
Get your ID, son. Yeah, I remember that time in that one little pond on the right-hand side where I bloody fell in, and I was slipping, and I knew I was too far gone, so I kind of gracefully pushed myself out, and that's when I was like, Wayne! Right. And I remember I was fine, and then all of a sudden I kind of put my feet down, you know, to catch the bottom, yeah. And I started sinking in this mud, and then all of this gas came up. It was disgusting. Yeah. I was like, get me out of here.
Years and years of vegetation debris.
Oh, yeah. But there were some lovely little fish in there, weren't there?
There are.
Beautiful lilies and stuff, and I'd love to go back and fish that place, I tell you.
We've got another year.
That's right. I've got to get out there and do it. And then the other lakes for us that played a big part for us was Paris, wasn't it?
Lake Paris, I would say Santee in San Diego.
That's right.
Lake Puddingstone. Yeah, got some nice fish out of there with it when my kids were little.
And what was the name of the devil? What are you called the Devil's Lake? What was that up in the mountains?
Quail.
Because Dave came. That's right.
Quail Lake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Scary up there.
That was a windy night or two up there. Because it's in like a wind tunnel. And the Californian aqueduct runs into it. So the water levels change by 6 to 10 feet a night. We'd not know.
And I found out to my detriment up there on my own one night. Woke up with water rushing into my bivvy, having to just get up and chuck everything back. I was half asleep. But I never we saw carp crashing in there. Yeah. I never caught anything in there. I know Dave's hook got straightened by a fish in there, didn't it? Remember?
Yeah, he couldn't move it off the bottom. There's some big fish in there, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
It's just like I said, it's just a little bit isolated. It's I'd say 15 miles from town. And you know, it can be a bit gangy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
You gotta be in a crew of you gotta be more than two or three.
It did have a vibe. That's why I was like, I think I called you. I'm bloody not going up there again, mate, on my own.
lots of great memories.
Yeah, I know, mate. Yeah. And I think Lake Paris was a big one. It was Lake Paris was a big one. That was the first lake I got a 20 out of.
Yeah.
After trying at Santee and stuff like that. With a number of, but Lake Paris was a special lake because we'd kind of tag team it and then we'd fish up there together, wouldn't we? And there was I remember that one session that you'd been up there, I think, all night, and you had a you had a bunch of fish, didn't you?
Yeah, that was a 700-pound session, an 18-hour 700-pound of fish session
that's right.
But you know
it was in between those two trees, wasn't it? There was two trees there. Wasn't that the same swim where we got rumbled by the dogs and the police and stuff?
I got some video of that, actually. We need to release that sometime or other.
You do?
I did. When DVDs were just coming in. Oh, gosh, showing our age now. That was the very first DVD I ever put together.
Wow. I'd love to see that.
There's one where you are, you are angry. You're not happy because we've been rumbled the night before by. Oh, we'd organise it with the chief of the Rangers there for a night.
Oh, Raphael.
Session. Raphael.
Right, wasn't it? Yep. That's right. Yeah.
And he'd not told his foot soldiers. So, and it's illegal, or it was at that time, to night fish on that lake, particularly that part of the lake. Yeah. So, again, we got rumbled, ID'd, and, you know, we woke up about 2:30 in the morning. These guards,
bloody German Shepherd, foot from your face, gnashing away.
Yeah, and these guys, the Rangers shouting German commands at the dogs. It's like, oh, what's going on?
They had us out, didn't they, in handcuffs? Not handcuffs, but hands behind our back, sitting on the side of the bank.
Yeah.
And I was furious because we were in for a good session. And I know the next morning I picked up a nice fish the next morning, but. Yeah. They blew it. We had the really good vibe going and stuff. Yeah. And they're like, are you doing drugs? And we're like, no. What? And I think they said, what are you doing? And I looked, there's four bloody fishing rods sitting there on rod pods. I'm like, we're fishing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
you know. And then it did go down a different alley when we're like, look, your boss told us that we could fish here.
Well, he wasn't very happy because they called him in Vegas. He'd gone for a long weekend in Vegas, so they'd woke him up or done something crazy.
Then
at the end of all that, I mean, we're talking all that. We're talking about probably 45 minutes of sheer terror.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was maybe a little exaggeration. Maybe 40 minutes of sheer terror. Then they had the audacity. Did you hear us coming? We're training the dogs.
I know. That was the only thing they cared about. We had heard them sneaking up to ambush us.
Yeah.
And they were...
I forget what I said, but I'm sure I just wanted rid of them. I said, no.
Yeah.
Good job. Well, I think we reeled in though. We just
we did. It was blown. The whole
but you did
serenity
have a 30 that next morning though.
I had a 30. It was crazy because there was this. It was. I woke up and the light was just coming up.
Yeah.
And there literally was a sunbeam. There was a sunbeam. One sunbeam hitting this spot of water, and I'm like, I'm going to cast right there. And
I cast there
within about 30 minutes. It went off.
Boop.
Yeah, but that had some lovely fish in it.
It did. Unfortunately, a lot of the locals a lot of retirees there, and they just take 20, 25, 30-pound fish after the other. So it struggled a little bit for a while.
Yeah.
And then they drained it because there were some problems with the dam, I think. So that area was all dry, high and dry. It's full of water now, but it's a forest.
It must have been, there must be some bloody great fish in there, mustn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
There's got to be a 50 in there.
You can't get to enough of the shoreline.
That's right.
It's not accessible. It's like, same with Castaic, a lot of the lakes around there. But anyway, yeah, that's a lot of great memories.
We did have some good times there, didn't we? And then I think it all really came together for us at the sort of its beginning of 2000s, didn't it? And then we started to get more into it and we found out about different organizations and stuff. And that's when we originally hooked up with David, and he came out and we went out for a curry and everything, and we put some ideas and stuff together. And that's when I was living in your garage, wasn't it?
That's right, it was, yeah. Was that about 18 months?
I think so.
Good 8 work.
Yeah. Wayne, I've been kicked out.
No, David Moore was. That was a lot. There was a lot of great synergy at that time. It was really.
We did
a lot of stuff. A lot of fun.
We had a lot of fun too. We had a lot of fun taking the rise out of him with his haircut appointment every 2 weeks on his calendar. Do you remember?
Oh boy, how things have changed.
He's not bloody doing that anymore. I can tell you.
Hi, Dave.
But no, when we were filming on Town Lake and stuff like that. We had a lot of fun, and that one session that we were lucky enough that we managed, didn't we, to get on film, where we found that Jack Quist swim.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was. I think the word epic comes to mind on that one.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was.
It just ain't right.
It was so funny because it was past the rocks, wasn't it? And we had the boats and the fish finder. And then you turn that corner and nobody could fish there because there was no shoreline. We turned that corner and all of a sudden it was like you're in the wilderness because the sides of the lake, they just went with granite, didn't they? They kind of just went vertical up with houses all the way up the top. It was like being on the Amazon. And I remember us going down there, looking through the fish finder, and there were boulders down there on the lake bed the size of a Mini Cooper, wouldn't there?
Yep.
And then we saw these fish, and we saw these really big fish.
Big arches on the fish finder.
Massive, great arches. How are we going to fish for them? So I remember we baited up, and then across the way, and it was at the end of a piece of land, there was just enough room to squash the three of us in there.
I don't think you can even get there today.
You can't.
But it was against a chain link fence on the college. What's the big college in Austin?
I don't know.
There was
fresh water running out of there into the lake, wasn't there?
That's right, because there was a big sandbar.
That's right. which went out, and Dave fished on the
Dave
sandbar.
Dave did really well off that, yeah.
He fished on the sandbar, you fished all the way to the right, and I was in the middle of you, but that was...
Well, you had them big old 13-foot rods at that time, so you could reach those boulders, so it was a no-brainer.
Well, I think it was that, and at that time, obviously, as well, it was those mainline pineapple boilies, which were just, it was like crack for them. We were fishing on the rocks with Al. Mm. Do you remember the first time when you caught a fish and I thought it'd be smart to put a bloody great torch on it to take a picture? So it was all blown out and looked absolutely bloody terrible.
Well, the batteries in my flash, it was one of those big tall flashes that you put in the shoe of the top of the camera. And okay. I brought the whole kitchen sink with me, but no bloody batteries that night.
That's right.
And it was dying.
We used that. And I remember it was the next day. I think Al came up to see us the next day. Mm. And we were talking about, you know, bait and stuff like that. So I think because he was really the one for me personally that made me really think about it.
Yeah.
And then when we were introducing them into that swim there and catching those fish, and we had, didn't we, a bunch of upper 20s, yeah, mid 30s, upper 30s, 40s. It was crazy.
Al had the big fish mentality. He could throw a single hook bait out, nothing else around it, put a couple of singles with the throwing stick out around it, and he'd wait.
Yeah.
With 100% confidence.
Yeah.
And
he knew that lake like the back of his hand, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. Or he'd see something crash or just porpoise out. Oh, I've had that fish. I'm like, dude, for real.
Oh, yeah. Bugger, he could really fish. He really knew his he was really tuned in. And didn't we have a ton of fun hanging out with him up at St. Lawrence and everything as well. He's such a great fun to hang out with and fish with. We had too much fun.
You know, there's some drama in the middle of it all, but they, you know, that all goes hand in hand with a good marriage.
Yeah, we did have a lot of fun, and that was an epic session there.
The Jack Quist one. Well, let's face it, you had 44 and a 46?
Yeah.
You know? And,
yeah. Much to Dave's chagrin at the time.
Dude, this just ain't right.
But he did. but he picked up the pineapple there, didn't he? That fully scaled mirror.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And we all got some beautiful fish.
Yeah, we did. And it wasn't one of those sessions where we went specifically to film it. It was the fact that I just, for whatever reason, I brought my little standard definition home video camera with me. It literally was a home video.
It was, wasn't it?
Didn't have that big, was it Sony that you had, that big?
A Canon.
That big old Canon one. We didn't bring that, and I nearly left it in the room. I remember. I thought, oof, that'd have been terrible, you know, thinking back on it.
Yeah.
But, that made the, what did we call that? Town Lake video, I suppose.
It was. And I have to thank you, Wayne, because after that first 40 that I had, I kind of put my rods up.
Oh, that's right.
And I sat there. Yeah. Remember, I sat there in the middle of you both, put the rods up, because I found this.
Oh, I just got goosebumps.
My lucky feather.
I just got goosebumps thinking about it.
I found this feather. I'd found this lucky feather, and I caught it. I caught this feather. It was obviously in a bird in a tree, and it was. I remember it twizzling around like a helicopter, and I caught it before it hit the ground.
Yeah.
It was when we were cutting out all those other swims, and I got poison ivy, like nothing else, but it's another story.
A magnet for that.
But I put that in my hat at the time, and after, because I had a bunch of 30s, after that 45, I was like, I'm just going to sit here and relax the rest of the day. And you were the one that encouraged me. You're like, look, you've got to get back.
You're on a roll, dude. You need to get back out. If you've had this sort of fish, we know them fish around them boulders. Just throw them out again, even if you're just going to have a cup of tea or something. Cup of coffee, chill.
Yeah,
you know, you're sitting there and not having your rods out, but
and it was within an hour, wasn't it?
That big old fish came in. Oof.
Oh man, and Al had that fish as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's face it, which fish hadn't added from that lake? Really?
That's very true. Yeah. Any large fish in there over 40, Tal had pretty much to, yeah.
We're talking about Al St. Cyr.
We are talking about Al St. Cyr, the great, the one and only Tal.
Such a natural angler.
Who won our tournament, Texas Carp Challenge in 2006.
Six it was, yeah.
Yeah. That was
250,000.
250,000. And that was a roam around. That was not your pegged anywhere. It's you can fish wherever you want, wasn't it? So yep. you had that quandary of anglers.
Town was open. Lake Austin was open. It meant a lot of work for us running around weighing fish, but we got it down.
We did.
And Dave came up with some great ideas. To be fair, on that tournament, I mean, it was he worked his
on the roving
off.
Thing and everything. Yeah, yeah,
it was a great idea.
Yeah, yeah, that was a really good idea. And Al had moved. We'd visited him a couple of times at different pegs because he was fishing the gazebo area because he saw a big fish crash out there, and then he moved somewhere else, and he ended up, and it was the second day, wasn't it? Because it wasn't the first day. It was two. I think it was 2 day event. It was the second day, and he was at the Homer Swim, and that's when we got the phone call because we were about to go and grab a coffee and a pastry or something.
Trying to escape for half an hour. Yeah,
that's right. We got the phone call, and I'm like, he's got it. He's caught the bloody record. Come on! So I remember us going over there, and seeing that fish.
Oh, the news crews came down.
Gilbert,
yeah. Texas Parks and Wildlife were there to measure it, and
yeah.
And I think I think he had to be wired up for that. Well, to a lie detector before they'd release the 250 grand.
That's right.
I mean, that was a whole palaver.
But that was amazing.
Very, amazing fish.
It was.
And moments. I mean, it was. Yeah, magical.
Well, it's pretty significant, I think, in US for US carp history.
Yeah.
Obviously. And then the year before we'd done the World Carp Championship on the St. Lawrence, which was obviously very significant too. So wasn't that the evening where we went to the Mexican place and you guys introduced me to a blue drink or something?
Oh,
wasn't that
Baby A's? And that was and then they had the blue, I think it was blue ball with the in some hellishly powerful
I don't know
tequila.
What it was, but
Sean says, yeah, I'll have it. Was your toast, mate. Yeah. Two sips
and
the eyes.
And I turned.
That's right. Two sips and the eyes were glassy. I thought,
Lord.
He's in trouble here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was baby A's. That'll bring a few smiles to those in the know.
But we did have, I remember our first trip, actually, Wayne, out there to Austin, because we traveled all the way from California because we'd heard about it, obviously, through everyone. And my first big memory of it is what we call Deer Splat Highway. Do you remember there was that one because there was one kind of off-road that we took. We didn't take a freeway. Or
I want to say 273 going up into Austin.
Was it?
I can't remember.
Every 100 yards is another deer. There's another deer dead on the side of the road. You know, everywhere.
I can remember. I mean, big carp, the big white Suburban at that stage. And
that's right.
All I can think of is like, oh, don't want, because you know, one runs out, 10 of them run out. So I thought, there's no way I'm doing this at night. So note to self.
We have a lot of very fond memories of fishing, obviously, in Austin. Met a lot of incredible people there.
Yes,
anglers from all over the country. You know, that was a lot of fun. And then the other place where we met a bunch of anglers when we went out to Chicago the first time, wasn't it?
Yeah,
we went out there for.
Well, that was a thing we did. We did a tournament out there.
That's right.
And then we disappear for a week. We go up into Wisconsin. I did that for a few years. Tommy Riley was a name that jumps out at me there. Such a funny fella. I mean, funny in a good way. I mean, hilariously funny.
He was, wasn't he? We used to stay with him, didn't we, at his house it wasn't New York. Where was he? Chicago.
Chicago,
was he
Chicago? Downtown.
Yeah, he was in Chicago.
Literally downtown Chicago.
Yeah.
And him and his wife, Corrine, were nice enough to open their living room, and there'd be about 10 guys there in bed chairs.
That's right. All on bed chairs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Absolutely wonderful atmosphere. It was all, and, you know, so carpy.
It was. It was so carpy. And so met so many great, created some great relationships with people, and some, just met some incredible American anglers, US anglers too, that had this huge passion for the fish that we, you know, obviously that we had, that were incredibly supportive and stuff of, you know,
still
of what we were doing.
Many, many good friends. Yeah. You could pick the phone up and, you know, they'd be right there for you today.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
I was going to say the other real big venue for us was obviously was the St. Lawrence, wasn't it?
Yes, definitely. Well, I think 2003, 2004, and then obviously culminating in the 2005 World Cup Championships in Waddington. Yeah.
Because fishing that was very different for us from fishing Town Lake and even the big reservoirs and stuff in Southern California, wouldn't it? Because of the movement in there and everything.
Well, I have to be honest, I'm not a river fisherman anyways. You know, I just didn't have many. I mean, it was more of a chalk stream where I lived.
Yeah.
You know, where I grew up. And you just
and
trot,
I tell you what,
you trot a little float down it and boom.
That's what I was used to in a still water load in the Fens. I mean, and this is a... I mean, this is a real river, isn't it?
Yeah, when you got a 50,000 or 100,000 ton boat coming up yeah. by, you know.
But we did. We had some wonderful sessions out there with Joe Babbitt. Remember Joe and his cabins?
Yeah,
and,
I do.
And Al came out while we were doing all the recce's for the World Carp Championship and everything. And those fish in there, the tails on them and stuff. And you couldn't...
So powerful.
You had to... Yeah. They were, weren't they?
So
and you
powerful.
Had to use like size 2 mm-hmm. hooks. And I mean, you had to use really, really robust heavy tackle because they were just built differently than the still water carp, weren't they?
The ton up, who made the ton up? Kristen. Ton up leaders, 2 or 3 rod lengths of almost 50 pounds, 60 pounds, 100 pounds even on some of the stretches.
Yeah,
just so you wouldn't get cut off either on the rocks or
the zebras.
Zebra mussels run up and down the weed because that could be, you know, that could be 10, 15 feet tall.
Yeah.
We had a great time.
That's also where we met Bernie Hayes, didn't we?
Did.
Yeah, yeah. Met Bernie, bless him.
Salmon Ranch.
That's right. He's not with us anymore, but he did an awful lot for US carp fishing.
He did.
Up there and introducing kind of, he was one of the key individuals to introduce, you know, England and Europe to the St. Lawrence and US carp, you know, the potential for US carp angling and stuff like that.
There's a number of guys up there. And shamedly, I can't remember a couple of the names right now, but Bernie. Joe Babbitt, and there was a prison officer. I'm sorry, I can't remember your name, mate.
They were the two guides, weren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah.
Up there.
There's another guy,
you know, and there's obviously a lot of local guys that fish for them up there and stuff as well. But they, the fish in that river up there are, for any carp angler, if you ever get the chance to fish the St. Lawrence River, you need to take advantage of it. It is incredibly unique. It's an incredibly unique experience. And it will really, really test you, but you've got to go up there with some really stout tackle and pretty much sit on your rods.
You got the Canadian side too, that's pretty handy. Got some buddies up there that actually guide up there on the Canadian side. Paul Hunt. Yep. Wonderful fella.
Yeah,
get on there. The main line. Hello, mate. Oi, oi.
Yeah, there's a lot of wonderful fish, obviously up there, and it will test you as an angler in terms of, you know, how you approach it. Mm-hmm. And I remember a bunch of sessions with Phil up there with us too. Phil Saunders,
yeah.
Phil GB.
He's just been up with Dave actually. Where are we now? Not to date this, but I think we're in. Pushing August now, end of August. July. So I think beginning of July they were up there. I think they did okay eventually.
Yeah.
Mixed results. But hopefully get together with Phil later in the year if everything clears up. And
it was great to see him, wasn't it, last November at the
Mill Creek.
Mill Creek.
Yep.
It was, and he had us in stitches. Of course, as always, because the humour on him is just a bloody laugh a minute.
It is.
No matter what's going on, he'll bring a smile to your face. He had me in absolute stitches two or three times. I was like, oh, God, Phil, I miss you, man. I miss this humour.
He's a great character. You know, there's so many. I mean, I can think, count on one hand the amount of dodgy characters that, we don't need to go there. I mean, most of the guys are just absolutely, all of them, one or two, it's absolutely fantastic.
They are incredible. And then the other lake that plays a really big part, which obviously a lot of people know about now, and you and Dave were one of the first two anglers that I know of in the States to go fish up there Eurostyle.
Yep. That's got Blackfoot. Yep.
Yeah.
In unison. Blackfoot.
Yeah.
Here you go. 2003.
That's right.
August. That was a...
first time you'd ever been up there, wouldn't it?
It was. We took a chance, really, in as much as not only on the fishing, but we made a family commitment. Right. Dave and Stephanie, his wife, went up. They didn't have any kids at the time, but Rachel and I, my wife, and my two kids, Dave and Steph, we all went up there and met, and we'd only known each other less than a year, so
right.
They stayed. We set up camp, then they went off to Yellowstone National Park for a couple of days, and then Dave and I fished until they got back. And I think we can't remember the actual number, but we must have had about 80, 90 fish between us.
It was incredible, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I didn't get that. Was strawberry boilies, that was. Actually.
I was going to say, I remember you telling me they wouldn't take anything else, would they, at the time?
No, and I took everything. Dave brought, I think Al St. Cyr had given Dave, or David bought, it was probably 30, 40 kilograms of these strawberry. They might have been mainline, probably were, no one else. Boilies, and they did smell good. But I didn't know, that these fish haven't seen a boilie before. It's one of those. They're all on snails and larvae and,
naturals.
Naturals, all naturals, yeah. So I'm there with tiger nuts and this and that, trying to be smart. And I thought I'd try some corn too, corn, the universal bait. And Dave says, no, going boilies. Says, all right, mate, good luck. And I think he'd had five fish before I'd even had a nibble.
Right.
We're only fishing 20 yards away from each other,
Yeah.
It is a wonderful, absolutely wonderful time.
And all mirrors.
It's all mirrors. I mean, there has been a couple of reports recently of some commons, but I have never seen a photograph.
So. Yeah, they're stunning fish too, aren't they? They're very European looking. They're very unique.
It's a different breed of fish to the, should we say, the main crop across the United States. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I think because the Oregon Trail, Dave and I surmise, the Oregon Trail, the. By the way, we're talking about Blackfoot Reservoir in Idaho right now.
Yeah.
And the Oregon Trail actually passes Soda Springs, which is the nearest town to Blackfoot Reservoir. And you can still see the wagon wheel ruts. They've preserved it in a couple of areas. And,
That's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. And we thought, well, maybe they came cook cross and seeded the lakes, with some German, can't we? They may have been German immigrants. Who knows? Austrian, but it was a different fish. And it's seeded all the way around there, Idaho, Wyoming, parts of Montana.
I tell you who, Wayne, who knows, who's very knowledgeable about that, is our good friend Eric Mayberry. He knows a lot about the history and stuff up there. It blows me away with some of the things that comes up with it, that he, on the tributaries and stuff like that, because they are very unique, beautiful fish. I mean, each one of them is really unique.
There's a bunch of guys up there fishing fairly regularly now, and they're definitely getting into some of the better fish.
Yeah.
So
there's some lovely fish out there, and I wasn't there with you guys because I was over in England at the time, wasn't I?
Oh, that's right. I think we were a bit disappointed about that, but you did all right. So I seem to remember.
I was really lucky, actually, because I was
lucky.
I managed to blag my way onto Cliff Fox's of Fox Tackle onto his private lake, Foxmere, with his son. And much to the chagrin of all of the local, you know, the members, which were probably all guys that worked for Fox and stuff like that. And I remember I had about 24 hours, and it was absolutely stunning, this lake.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And his son, he caught two or three fish, and I had this area that I liked. I was fishing next to him, but I went, no, I'm going to stick here. But there was all this sediment on the bottom everywhere. Yeah. It was all this black choddy stuff everywhere. And I found one area the size of a dinner plate, about 60 yards out.
Nice clunk.
And it was just before I lost the light, because I was using a marker rod. So I had one, you know, by the reeds, in the margins and stuff. I found a gravel bar there, and I plucked one out there and stuck about 18 boilies around it. And it was dead, you know, nothing all night. And his son had caught a bunch of fish. Well, he's caught six or seven fish. And it was great, because it's the first time I'd ever been at a carp lake, and we were able to order a curry, and it was delivered to us. It was an Indian. It was delivered right to the... they came to the gate, and he met him at the gate and bought some curry. It was wonderful. Wonderful
guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then next morning, just as the sun was starting to rise, one toner went off. It was 45.10, I think, or 45.6. I can't remember.
Yeah.
It was the prize fish in the lake, and I think his son's name was Richard.
Yes,
I think
was.
His son's name was Richard Fox, because his dad's name, because Cliff was the owner of Fox. And anyway, he was jumping up and down and calling everybody, and I'm like, what? It's a beautiful fish. He's like, it's like, hasn't been out in a year.
It's the fish.
Max had it 2 years ago. Max Cottis had it 2 years ago. And so anyway, Cliff was wonderful. He came down and made us a cup of tea and the whole thing. And,
oh, cool.
And yeah, but the word got out, and I was just like ostracized, because here I am, you know, living in America, come over one day, in and out, catch the one big fish, not even a bloody member. That I think it pissed a lot of them off, to be honest with you.
That's the way to do it. That's Jim Shelley style right now.
But that was wonderful, because I remember being at home, or being in England at my old home where I was raised, calling Dave on the phone, him telling me, you guys telling me of the session that you had at Blackfoot, and be able to share that news with you. So that was a wonderful summer.
Yeah, it was. You know, that was 2003, August 2003, I think.
And you mentioned Big Carp. Now, Big Carp is the white Chevy Suburban that we traveled all over the USA in.
Yeah.
That, how many times has that been across this country?
How many miles does it have? It has 272,000 miles on it right now. And I'm pretty sure it's good for another 100.
It probably is, mate.
But I'm going to retire and put her into a nice pasture. Hopefully one of the other carpers around, hopefully, will purchase it for next to nothing and look after it.
So much history.
Yes, that white Suburban
vehicle.
I'm just saying, we call it Big Carp because I got those plates, the California plates that actually say Big Carp. Quite vain, really, but you know, let's do it.
But I remember subsequent years, you know, over the last 8 to 10 years, when I've seen you've come out to Texas, obviously, which is where I am now, and you drive Big Carp out. It's, you know, because of her age and everything now, whenever we would be going to a lake or something, it's obviously she's slower and slow. You have to be really careful and gentle with her, don't you?
I get to your place. I'm in Los Angeles, by the way. So when I drive, it's a 2 day drive to Sean's. So when I get there, I say, well, she made it again, mate. She made it. And I think last time, the Mill Creek Cup, I think it got stuck in the mud. It had to be pulled out by a big JCB tractor.
Do you remember that? Yeah. Because what was it? It was the head of the lake down there. I think he came over to me and he said, which one of your guys got stuck his truck? And I said,
that was putting it nicely. I don't think you put it quite that way, but yeah, I'm guilty. Hands up, red face.
He was a really good sport, though. Yeah. He was a really good sport. So obviously, Wayne, you know, since we started all this, there's been an awful lot that's changed, hasn't there? Because of social media.
Yes, the popularity of the it's just gone. It's going through the roof, and in a good way.
Yeah.
I think the whole social media thing, it's a double-edged sword. But I think when you tot it all up and put the pros and cons, I think there's more pros.
Well, I think it's definitely
the way we've helped. The way we've used it, yeah. Anyway.
In the perception of the fish, because a wonderfully taken picture, you know, a picture taken with some thought, where the fish is the star. It's not the angler. It's for us at the American Carp Society. Is all about the fish.
Yeah.
When you can take the time and you can present that fish in such a way, nobody can look at it and not give it the value that it actually deserves. So, and we have to. I mean, a huge thanks to all of our members and all of the anglers that have been up in their game photography wise over the last few years, because I think it's really made an impact, don't you?
I think the change over the last 3, 4, 5 years has just been amazing.
Yeah.
Of course, there's always the guys, and, you know, total respect. I'm a fisherman, I'm not a photographer.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. No. And, you know, to be fair, there are days when I don't take the big camera. I take, you know, my phone, and I'm not too fussed one way or the other what the photograph looks like, long as it doesn't. And not because it's not a big fish. I'm not really a big fish guy, but it just, you know, I try and even it out. You know, some days, okay, let's get a really good photo of this. And I fish with a couple of buddies who just know their way around the camera. Richard Semantics being one.
Didn't it? Because you know you're going to get good shots if you're working with somebody, or you're fishing with somebody, and you know they know how to take a shot.
Uh-huh.
They're gonna present it in the best way. And it does, in all fairness, it does take some time, and it takes some work, and it takes some effort to learn to be intentional. You got to be intentional about wanting to learn how to do it. And I think we've had interviews in the American Carper publications with members that, thankfully, you know, have they realized they were catching some wonderful fish. John McGreevy comes to mind. He was very specific, saying, I was catching some wonderful fish. I wasn't doing a good enough job documenting them, and I made a big effort to do that. And now he's got that, you know, he's got that memory, because at the end of the day, obviously you've got the memory in your head and you've got that experience, but if you actually have the picture there to look at too, it can bring it all back for you, can't it?
Yeah, it does. And not only that, I think more, you're showing the fish, what that fish means to you, for even toward, you know, this, let's face it, this 44 million anglers in the United States. You're showing the rest of the guys who've not even thought about fishing for carp that fish in the best light you can get it at that particular time.
Exactly.
And that's like, oh well, these guys are crazy. It starts off, these guys are crazy, why are you doing that? And then it gets more to a understanding, okay. And then particularly if, you know, you're fishing next to one and some guy's asking you the usual question, oh, that's a nice, what's an unusual setup, what's this, what do you do with them, how do you fish for them? And it screams off, whoa. And then you just hand them the rod, try this, mate. It's, hey, buddy, whoa, now I get it. And the next thing, you get a nice email after it. So, well, thank you.
And I think what we've seen, Wayne, over the last few years is that that presentation, that upping in the presentation, has definitely turned it's turned anglers that wouldn't give the fish a second thought, because of potentially generational bias or something like that, they've thought about it. And hats off to all of the fly anglers out there too, because the fly anglers have really, I know we've really noticed over the past 3 or 4 years specifically, they have just, they blatantly come out and said to other fly anglers, you don't know what you're missing, you know. It's one of the hardest fish for you to catch. It will make every single fly angler that we've done interviews with has said the same thing. Yes. They will make you a better angler, period. Doesn't matter if you're fishing for tarpon, you're fishing for bonefish, fishing for anything on the fly. And I think the wonderful thing that I've recently learned from them is because of the seasonality of a lot of the freshwater fishes that they usually target on the fly, trout and that type of thing, they can't, or they don't, or they shouldn't target those fish during the summer. And so during the summer they can target carp, obviously, and so it allows them to fish the entire year through, which is wonderful for them. So hats off to the fly anglers, they're doing a great job.
Absolutely. And of course we just opened up that new fly membership now, so that's getting underway. And I think I expect that to be very, very popular in the coming years.
Yeah, I do too. And I think it's a wonderful to be able to give, because all of these, we saw all of these fly anglers out there fishing for carp that didn't necessarily have a, let's say, a base camp or a home, obviously, other than, you know, we're fly fishermen, so we all have that in common. So what we wanted to do was be intentional with trying to build something out specifically for the fly anglers in the United States that do target carp, that do fish for carp, and to be able to accommodate them and to be able to, you know, support what they're doing.
In the end, whether you're a traditional, whether you're a Euro, whether you're a fly angler, it's the respect of the carp. It's a challenge. And I think in the coming years, all that will come together. And I think a lot of the Euro guys, and we call it Euro guys because it's just the Euro techniques with the pods and the alarms, I think there will be a lot of crossover.
Well, that's already happened.
It is indeed.
That has already happened, Wayne. We've had anglers that started off with us as Euro members that have gone to the dark side, and they're catching them on the fly now. And a couple of them have been having some great conversations with messaging with Clifford Sharp, because he's obviously, he was in the last American Carper. I believe it was the last one he was in. We did an interview with him, started to target them on the fly. And he's been saying to me, "Guys, I love it. You know, I love it as much, if not more, now than the Euro." So it's great to have that, you know, to have that connection there, which is the fish. Whether you're targeting them on the fly, or you're wanting to catch them with a float, or you want to catch them with a traditional Euro method or whatever, it's all about the fish.
A bait guy, yeah. No, it's going to be interesting. I'm, you know, obviously, as what you and I do, we try and promote the fish, and you'd think after the number of years we've been doing it, it might be getting a little stale. But no, I mean, each year is more and more exciting. It's, oh no, what's going to happen with this next year? Let's try this, you know.
Yeah.
So the next few years are going to be something special, I think.
And I think, I mean, for us, we've talked about this a lot, but it's the members that we have and the support of the members and
amazing, and you guys absolutely
that
amazing
are listening to this is incredible. And so we couldn't do what we're trying to do for the fish without all of the members and the community that we have supporting, you know, the ideas that we have and everything. And so we'll always continue to just do everything we can for the fish, to help the fish, and obviously to help the members and the community and the membership. So,
and that leads out, I mean, I plan on the next few years. I know we're in the middle of the COVID thing right now, so that's put a little bit of a damper on travel. But I mean, in future, I'm going to be getting back on the road as much as possible, visit as many states and as many members, many non-member. If you fish for carp, let's get together, hit me up. And,
you've done a great job with that, Wayne. I mean, you've traveled across this entire country and you've met so many of the members face to face, which is really it's really key. And I think now, obviously, with the team that we have, with Clayton who is, bless his heart, is a diamond.
Absolutely.
Who keeps you and I sane, keeps us on the right track and everything with what he brings to the table, and what Eric's been doing and everything with the bait. It's been incredible. So
well, the team with Richards, I mean, Richard Cervantes of California, he's been a big help too.
His events are incredible. that he puts on there. Richard events are absolutely incredible. So we have a, obviously we're very lucky, we're very blessed, and we will continue to do as much as we can, you know, to push this forward. We, and we've got a number of things this year. Obviously, we launched the new American Carp Society Mark III, didn't we? The rods, MIA.
Yep.
We have a lot of other things going on behind the scenes that we won't disclose until they actually come out. But we've got a number of things like that going on. So,
well, like I said, 5 minutes. It's very, the next few years is very, very exciting. So,
yeah.
And I don't see the enthusiasm from anglers getting any smaller or any less.
No.
So it's gonna be cool, really cool.
And now, like you said, because of social media, you know, the Facebook group we have, Instagram, and the YouTube videos and everything, there's a lot more information that's able to be shared, you know, amongst each other. What we do each month now on the American Carper podcast is we run a competition, and we give out some we have a competition question, and our winner for July, because we're in the last day, actually it's August the 1st tomorrow, our winner for the July contest was Ryan Cruz from South Dakota. So I wanted to put a shout out. Well done, Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan.
Well done, Ryan. We've got a bottle of the Barnaby's Revenge Asterberry Cream Spray that will be winging its way out to you sometime this week. And for the month of August, we're going to give away one of the new American Carp Society baseball caps to the lucky winner.
Yeah.
One of those new caps that we've made. And so the question for August, we'll put this question out now for the listeners. Yeah. The question for the August competition is this. What was the title of the very first hard copy American Carper publication released in 2017? What was the title of the very first hard copy of the American Carper publication that was released in 2017? Okay, so send in your answers to info@americancarpsociety.com with August competition answer in the subject line, along with your name and address. And the winner will be pulled out of the hat at the end of August. And we'll announce it again on the air in the first episode in September. I think that's about all we've got time for today, Wayne, on this session. I'd like to give a really big thanks to my dear friend and co-founder of the American Carp Society, Mr. Wayne Boone, for all of his help with this today and always.
It's a team. It's always a team, mate. It's, It's been a pleasure.
We have gone through and continue to go through an awful lot to do as much as we can. And the great thing is the team's growing as well, which is great. So if anybody obviously has any questions for Wayne directly, he can be reached through the American Carp Society, through directly, what's the best way, Wayne? Through the email or the Facebook group?
You can message me on Facebook or Instagram. I'm fairly active on both of those, or even wayne@americancarpsociety.com email. Anyway, I'm not hard to find.
Any final words, mate, for today?
No, it's been a pleasure. It's been fun talking about it. I mean,
isn't it been great?
We haven't really actually scratched the surface, but
I know. We'll do another one. We'll have to do another one. So this part of the first part down memory lane has been wonderful.
Yeah.
Thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back here same time, same place, 2 weeks from now. So don't forget to join us. You can reach out to us here at the American Carp Society through Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and Twitter. Tag us with your captures at #AmericanCarpSociety and also #JoinTheGuiltyOnes, and we'll feature you on the feed. Okay. You can contact me directly for any questions at Sean@AmericanCarpSociety.com. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Be lucky.